This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. Caroline and Uma with you at 6:40 in the evening. Our next news story of the day, we're taking a look at politicians. Earlier it was political appointees, now it's politicians. And apparently the Ministry of Foreign Affairs has said that it will no longer appoint politicians as Malaysia's ambassadors abroad.
Yeah, that's right. So the Minister is Dato' Saifuddin Abdullah. Mm-hmm. He has said that the process of appointment would be made according to existing procedures already specified by Wisma Putra. Of course, there have been reports of, I guess, several politicians who were appointed as ambassadors by the previous government who reportedly were not pleased to have to come back. Is that what the report was?
I'm sure, yeah. I mean, okay, so you know how this works, right, Caroline, in the sense that there are some politicians, and as you know, if you've become an MP or so on and so forth, if you are high up in the rankings, you could be a minister or deputy minister. Mm. And that, too, is a kind of reward system, right? Mm. You've done well, your party has delivered the number of seats, and so therefore it is rewarded with a certain number of ministerships. Now, if you are on a second or third tier and of a politician and you are still deemed to be useful to the government, sometimes you get a cushy appointment, like ambassador to a country, for example.
Right. So what Saifuddin was commenting on were a couple of cases that he said were resolved without intervention from him, because it was reported earlier that the contract for the former Malaysian ambassador to Indonesia, Dato' Sri Zarin Mohamed Hashim, had been terminated 4 months earlier than the actual date in October. Also, the Malaysian envoy to the Vatican City, Tan Sri Bernard Dompok, was reported to have returned to Malaysia after receiving instructions from Wisma Putra. So, you know, I guess it was a little bit muddy there. But in these appointments, I think it feels very much like it's a vague-ish appointment / position.
It is.
You know, in that establishing any sort of universal standards or practices, it wouldn't be an easy task, right? Practical realities, once again, deferring laws, deferring cultures, means that you have to be, to a degree, quite nimble.
Yeah.
So at least if you want to be effective and adaptable. So you don't want to be cementing certain things.
No. But politicians as ambassadors in general have always been seen as rewards to that individual. So when the appointment of politicians. So sometimes, you know, we've had situations in the past where politicians, say, have been dumped from a cabinet lineup and then been made an ambassador to another country. Mm. So that's like a consolation prize almost.
Yeah.
We've also had politicians made ambassadors in their twilight years, if you will, or as their career is beginning to wean as a kind of, go have some fun in another country, enjoy a bit lah.
Yeah. There was some talk about only appointing career diplomats into the position a couple of days ago. The discourse was around, whether or not the politicians were unqualified versus these career diplomats. But I think it's also not fair to say, right? Because not every less qualified politician appointed has been a disaster.
In
the same way, not every career diplomat has been a winner.
Correct.
Right.
And I think for certain countries, for example, we know who our important trade partners are. So we need the best people in those positions because we have the most interactions with those countries. We also know which countries are, I guess, somewhat problematic. And so we need really good diplomats and technocrats in those positions as well.
Well, there is that. But, someone who is articulate and, I guess, can support the administration's priorities would be one thing, and whether or not... You just say if you are a career diplomat, does that trump strong local knowledge of language, politics, culture, that sort of thing? I also do wonder how much the Foreign Affairs Ministry actually does by way of training these diplomats who are in place.
Yeah. Many, many years ago, Caroline, when I was in the UK, I attended a function when I was studying there. March, wee lad I was. I attended a function at which the Malaysian ambassador... me, not you.
I never attend such fancy functions.
No, I attended a function. It was a dinner at the House of Lords and the Malaysian ambassador was present. And it was a very embarrassing situation because... his command of the English language was poor, to say the least. And I'm like, well, this is the ambassador to the United Kingdom. you should find someone who can speak English well.
Or at least train them to communicate.
Exactly. Right?
I'm not talking about a welcome pack. You know, I think we also don't want to perpetrate a fiction that all career diplomats are otherwise skilled practitioners and experts. You know, I feel that there needs to be some sort of process to determine what makes a successful ambassador.
We're going to cross over now to Tan Sri Rastam Mohamad Issa, chairman of the Institute of Strategic and International Studies Malaysia, or ISIS. He's had many years of experience in foreign service. He's held ambassadorial postings in Pakistan, Bosnia, Indonesia, and was permanent representative to the United Nations in New York. Tan Sri, thank you so much for taking our call and joining us on the program. So to start off, why were politicians appointed as our ambassadors in the first place?
If you look at the history of diplomacy itself, before foreign services came into being, ambassadors were appointed from among either close confidants of the ruler, of the king, or the emperor, and of course from among politicians. In the case of the newly independent United States of America, for example, they had, I think, even Thomas Jefferson became an ambassador. You know, he was definitely a politician. So the history has been like that. And of course, then when foreign service, as such, or diplomatic service was formed, there were professionals who were appointed. But, you know, that has not stopped political appointments of politicians or business people or professionals who are essentially close to the government's concern. And this has been the practice in many countries.
Fair enough. So what do you think of the minister's statement? Do you feel that was a negative thing at all to appoint politicians as envoys?
No, I think in some cases they have performed well. In some cases it has worked very well, because some of these people have very good contacts with the host countries, or they are able to get into the job very well, I would say. So there's really no problem. But eventually, I suppose a decision of this nature has to be made either as a policy or as a practice by the government concerned. But there are many countries that still carry out that practice.
So based on what you've seen in our diplomats, in what ways do you think our foreign service can do better?
Well, of course, there needs to be constant training. People need to be proficient in language, not just necessarily English, but also other languages as well. In fact, that would be a great advantage for those, say, serving in Spanish-speaking countries, if they were to be able to speak Spanish. Those who can speak Mandarin or write in Mandarin would you know, be very useful, not necessarily just in China, but also in other countries as well. So those are the things, you know, those are the requirements, the qualifications, the preparations that are needed to ensure that people can represent the country as well as they could.
Tan Sri, thank you so much for your perspective. That was Tan Sri Rastam Mohamad Issa, chairman of ISIS, the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, Malaysia.
Now, earlier, we also spoke with Ambassador Dato' Dennis Ignatius, former ambassador to Chile, Argentina, Canada, and former head of American Affairs for Wisma Putra. Now, he spoke about how political connectedness comes into play in diplomacy.
Current appointments are based primarily on seniority. That is not to say that we don't have outstanding men and women in our foreign service, of course, because we do. At the end of the day, it's about putting our best foot forward. What we need are highly capable, experienced, and talented professionals to represent us abroad. If they are available from the career foreign service, by all means, we should use them. If not, we should consider looking outside the service. But bear in mind that diplomacy is an art that takes time and experience to develop. Ambassadors, as you know, are the interlocutors between governments, and this must always be handled carefully. We can bring in economists or other technocrats and even businessmen to strengthen the functioning of our diplomatic missions. But ambassadors, the heads of mission, should have at least some experience in the art of diplomacy.
All right, that was Ambassador Dato' Dennis Ignatius, 36-year veteran of the Malaysian Foreign Service. Thank you so much for his thoughts as well on the matter. We've got some more music coming your way now. The Rolling Stones, Just Your Fool on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.